Each Wednesday, we cover the peace community in the Capital District. David Easter is a longtime activist in the Capital District who has followed events in Korea closely. In fact, I think I first met David back in 1980 when he was running the Committee for a New Korean Policy. But he's also a member of the Upper Hudson Peace Action Steering Committee. So welcome, David, to WOC. And maybe you could start off by giving us just a little bit of your own background of involvement with Korea and then, you know, bring us up to speed on the current state of relations.
Yes, Mark. Thanks for having me on the your program. I did work for the Committee for a New Korea Policy for 15 years. This was a group that was working to change U.S. foreign policy towards Korea. We were working for and to support or the South Korean dictatorships, which that has changed by now. We were working to get nuclear weapons out of Korea. The U.S. used to station tactical nuclear weapons there. Those weapons are out, but we still have the nuclear issue before us. And we were working for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Korea, and those troops are still there. So this has been a long time effort over that time. I haven't been in the forefront of organizing on this for the last period, but I am have followed Korea with great interest all through the years.
Most Americans don't remember the history of the Korean War and how it impacts upon the current situation today. Could you give us an overview?
Well, Korea was one country, the country of Korea, for 5,000 years. It at different times had to pay tribute to China, or it had, but it was a single country from 1910 until the end of the Second World War. It was a colony of Japan. And Japan still is disliked by Koreans for the treatment that they received during that period. At the end of the Second World War, Korea was divided arbitrarily by the United States and Russia, who each sent troops into United States into the southern half of the country, Russia into the northern half, and Korea has been divided ever since. Into two different countries. The Russians pulled their troops out, but the U.S. kept their bases and troops in South Korea. North Korea has continues to have, both countries had dictatorial forms of government, but North Korea continues to have a top-down dictatorial society. The South Korea has a democratic government now. So this was like and then in 1950 there was essentially both sides. There was a desire for the Korea to get back together as one country. There were groups organizing all across North and South to try to get Korea reunified. Basically, what we had was this turned into a civil war situation. North Korea says South Korea started it. South Korea and the U.S. said North Korea started it, and that's the history that we hear. But it was a bloody, awful civil war for 3 years. In the end. And many, many, many U.S. soldiers went into Korea, and then China sent troops in. And in 1953, the war ended in a stalemate, an armistice agreement was agreed to that left the country divided into two parts. And really was no peace settlement or resolution to the end of the war. In theory, the U.S. is still at war, suspended through this armistice with North Korea. And the fact is we've had a hostile relationship towards North Korea for all of these decades since. The U.S. has had a very consistent policy, which is to place economic sanctions on North Korea and to keep our troops and viewed North Korea as a military threat and to treat it as an enemy, have annual many, both spring and summer war games with large numbers of troops in South Korea to prepare for a war with North Korea. North Korea consequently views the U.S. as an enemy and has reason to remember, you know, like their capital at the end of the Korean War, there was only one building left standing.
So actually, we're going to get a little bit more depth about this. But,
we want to talk about the very hopeful situation right now. We want to get into that pretty soon.
Okay. So what do the people in Korea, and I'm talking about both sides, North and South, what do they want at this point as opposed to what the various political and military leaders want?
There's you know, a lot of years have passed. There's still a very strong longing in Korea for the country to be reunified, in theory at least. And there, all of their tens of thousands of families that are still divided, who have no contact with their relatives on the other side of the border. The people who will still remember people in their family are quite elderly right now. But it's this is a ongoing concern for Koreans. Of course, neither side wants to live under the system of the other. So the Korean people basically don't want another war. They realize how disastrous that would be. So that's the starting point, even though each side has a large military and, you know, prepares for war. But ordinary people have a strong, you know, can't imagine what would happen if there was a war.
You were starting to say that there's reason to be optimistic. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, you know, we've lived over the last months, this last year, under the feeling of threat from North Korea by the people in the U.S. have been concerned about North Korea's nuclear weapons. During most of this history, North Korea provided absolutely no threat to the United States itself. They're a small country. They're an impoverished country. They're a distant country. They have a coastal navy, but they don't have a navy that could attack us or planes that could attack us or any. They're not a military threat. They are a military threat to South Korea, because half the population of South Korea lives in close proximity to North Korea. Seoul, the capital, is 35 miles from the demilitarized zone, the dividing line between North and South Korea. So if a war started, the population of this Seoul metropolitan area is huge. It's 25 million people in the whole metropolitan area, and they are all within, say, artillery range of and missile range from North Korea. So if a war started, the estimates by our own military are that within the first week or two, maybe 300,000 people would be dead. So it would just be miserable. Now, of course, North Korea is under similar threat from the South. The South has outspent the North at least 2-1 every year for the last 40 years. They have a much more sophisticated, technologically sophisticated military. The South Korea has twice the population of North Korea. They have a much larger GMP or economy than North Korea has. So North, just militarily, we have this situation of threat. But in the last, starting with the Olympics, The current government in South Korea is a progressive government and has been pushing for dialogue with North Korea. And they used the Olympics to invite North Korea to send high-level delegations and to send out teams to compete in the Olympics, which happened. And at that, during the Olympics, the president of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, sent his sister as a representative, and she carried a message from her brother to the South Korean president saying that they would like to have direct dialogue. There has been, on two other occasions, North and South Korea have had summits between the presidents of the country, and there have been steps towards reconciliation and easing of tensions. But then, at least in the South Korean case, a new election, and last time this happened, a conservative government came in, and they just put a halt to a lot of the dialogue. So then, this week, the South Korea sent a high-level delegation to North Korea and met with the North Korean leader, who said that agreed to have another summit meeting between North and South Korea, the presidents, which will take place near the end of April.
David, we're about out of time, so I'm going to give you about a minute and a half. So what constructive role can the United States play at this point? If people want more information about the Korean situation, how best to find it?
Yeah. U.S., how the U.S. responds to this dialogue is crucial. President Trump's initial response has been positive in terms of the sense we could have dialogue. North Korea has said that they would eliminate their nuclear weapons if they would have security guarantees. Now, that's the rub. What exactly does that mean? They clearly would want a peace treaty and a non-aggression pact and a reduction of the war games that are aimed at them, and either elimination getting the U.S. troops out of Korea or a reduction of U.S. troops in Korea. But we don't know. We have to talk to them to find out what will happen. So it's going to be very important that that these negotiations be supported and followed.
Well, David, thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you. My pleasure. Okay. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
And that was David Easter's part of our Wednesday Peak segment. And for those of you just tuning in, I'm Mark Dunlop.